Welcome to the Boost Podcast with me, Graham Farmer, and I'd like to thank everyone that's been listening to the podcast recently. Sorry it's been a bit jolted and back and forth. I'm trying to get back into the flow of recording them naturally and then uploading them quicker and also getting the editing right. It's just been a bit of a nightmare recently, so apologies for the kind of stops and starts with this. I've got so many good podcasts. I've got a great podcast next week coming with Mr. C, which I'm really excited about. A really good chat with him. And this week, I have a Brighton Music Conference special. I recorded this podcast a couple of weeks ago, and at the time, Robbie Murch, who is joining me on the podcast, he had a panel as part of Brighton Music Conference 2020. Things changed, the government changed, as with the world these days, it changes fast. Brighton Music Conference have had to scale back their output this year, and they're doing a virtual conference, which has actually been announced that it's all free this year, as they're supporting the music industry. Robbie did have a panel Robbie did have a panel as part of the conference, so this interview is kind of speaking about the panel and himself and what he does. I've kept this podcast in because there's some really great content about community later in the podcast. Also, it's great to introduce Robbie to you, and kind of the group that he works for as well is really interesting and really exciting. So I really wanted to keep the content in. Robbie's not going to be at the Brighton Music Conference this year, but there are so many great people there, and it's still going to be a great conference that you can watch from home. So let's jump into this, and I'll let Robbie tell you more about himself. Hi, Robbie. How you doing?
Right, let's jump into it. Hey, Robbie. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. Welcome to our podcast, and it's great to have you.
Yeah, good to see you again.
I thought we'd talk. I thought we'd start by just kind of getting you to introduce yourself, what you do, and how you kind of got to where you are now.
So I'm Robbie Murch. I'm running the Chieftain of IOM Identification and Music Group, and that is an online music media platform which primarily started to identify tracks from DJ sets, which Sam couldn't do. That quickly grew into an 100,000 strong community of music lovers around the world.
From wow, it's 100,000 now. Wow.
110K, yeah, with a 30K waiting list. Wow. And yeah, it's going well. So I've managed to spin it more into of a music media platform. We do free events for our members. We've done mostly focused on music education and trying to help get young people into the music industry. We run a not-for-profit label with Chrysalis and Blue Raincoat Music, helping young people who don't have opportunities get their first releases out, get experience in the industry and stuff. And aside from those two things, also a creative agency, which manages to pay the bills on the side. That's a summary, I suppose.
When did you start it?
So I didn't start it. A friend called Daniel Rothwell started it, and we met out in China about 5 years ago when I was studying there. And when I got asked to host the Boiler Room in Mandarin and English, he said, do you want to become an admin? And once I was an admin, I was super keen to just carry on, not necessarily growing it, but growing it out. We didn't want to grow the number up, but I wanted to make it multi-platform, get events going. We weren't meeting these people, we were having discussions online. So yeah, it was a nice chance to get to know some of the faces that I'd sort of always known online, and sort of make that into your own sort of group of friends, really.
Yeah, yeah. How was it? Was it already kind of, what was the follower count when you kind of got involved? Was it?
25,000, I'd say.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't really put a lot of the follower growth down to myself or any, apart from Dan and the group of friends who started at the time. I think it was just in the right place at the right time.
Right.
Facebook groups, blogs, people were sharing music on that was the predominant social platform. And people just wanted to ID tracks, and that was the best way to do it at the time. And it just spread via word of mouth, really, from the new music group and the old music group and all those amazing blogs.
I guess so the premise is basically people put their tracks in there and that they don't even know what it is, and it's just who can identify it. And that's as simple as the simple premise of it.
Yeah, I always say if you're looking to identify a track you've heard in your favourite local bar, club, on the radio, or you've got a white label at home, you have no idea what it is, you can take a video, audio, or voice recording, put it in our group with 100,000 music superheroes, and they'll be able to tell you what the track is.
Amazing. That's amazing. I guess it just grows from more people inviting more people in and more music that people don't know what it is and people tag other people in, and it kind of grows that way.
Yeah, that's exactly how it grew. I mean, it's been capped. There's been a waiting list for a while just because there's a certain element of having a community. It's nice to know there's a bit of a closeness to it, and just growing things for the sake of them often can deplete that sense of community. So always sort of toyed with the idea of when to go, when is the right time. But since having done some a few events sort of in Ibiza last summer and International Music Summit and in London and Leeds, I kind of realised that, right, we can accept some more people on board now. So bit by bit, yeah.
Why are you holding them back? Is it kind of just to kind of keep an eye on the numbers that there is, or
the idea was just so you can keep that sense of community, I suppose, just make people feel like they're part of something, which is...
Close this door, hang on 2 seconds. Okay. Sorry.
Good? Yeah.
Someone's bashing around in the kitchen.
Lockdown life. So you make people feel like they're part of something which is closed and secret and a little bit cool and exclusive, and it was nice. There's just that feeling there. I mean, if we accept too many people, it starts to lose a bit of that family feel. I mean, to be honest, it's a pretty big family at 110,000.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just a grown beast, and now I'm growing it after being really sort of precarious, if that's the right word, about growing it. It's just to see what more opportunities can come for us as a community, really. So yeah, having this, the new label and the creative agency where we're able to hire people to do content and member focuses and community focuses, spend more time doing premieres has been super cool.
So do you, the media agency that kind of focuses on using the community to, I guess, push content to in there, or push content that other people want in there?
No, we're not a promo tool. Always been against IOM as a promo tool. I think videos for DJs have turned into a promo tool, but that whole idea just seems a little bit naff, a little bit forced and against underground ethos, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the agency side of it is something which happens behind closed doors with the members who get in touch via email or DMs and want to work with us. And the aim of that is to work with our creative members, whether they're photographers, producers, videographers, and just closer to the creative industries and offer a platform for them to sort of grow, really, and grow with us.
Oh, I see. So I guess, yeah, because your members must cover a broad spectrum of different, their own job roles, I guess. Is that?
Yeah, my majority get fans, but we reckon about 20% produce themselves, 20-25% produce themselves. And then aside from that, 70% of DJs, I reckon, they reckon they have decks or they consider themselves a DJ. The industry members, I reckon about 10%, perhaps. I'd say about 10% maybe. And those are the people I'm enjoying speaking to at the moment most, because it's what I'm trying to do myself.
That's really cool. Okay, cool. I didn't understand that. That's just really cool. Has it been affected by, have you been affected by lockdown and pandemic and I guess less people,
obviously clubs aren't open, so less people are sharing live club IDs, but people are going more into playlists. It's been nice to notice that there's been a rise of ambient and more chilled out music and less heavy hard hitters. I think there's been less filler and more music's enabled, that's actually quality music has been able to shine through rather than a lot of the club music, which can just tend to fill the void when people need it. I think that's the biggest thing I've noticed, really. unless something's got a really nice melody or good harmony, or it's, for example, that kind of YouTube style house algorithm that's Harrison BDP kind of always coming on the right hand side of your screen.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of music is resonating far more than sort of heavy 130
techno. all the great chugging music. Okay, that's really interesting. I guess people are kind of hearing stuff on the radio and playlists, and not really playlists, but the radio, and then trying to get that identified. I guess that's really interesting how it's changed.
Yeah, we did a research project called Lockdown Live. Hmm. Right at the start, so pretty much 1st of April, end of March, and we interviewed 40 artists from Archie Hamilton, Roscoe, Blanca from South America, loads more, and the Plastician on the grimier side, and just asking them how sort of lockdown had treated them, how they've been affected. And Rough Doug summarised it best in terms of saying people were looking for escapism, and he used the analogy of Netflix at the time. The two most popular things were I Am Legend, which is sort of providing an antidote to this whole crisis.
Yeah.
And the second one was the Joe Catman. What was that thing called? Tiger Man.
Tiger something or other. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're looking for like complete escapism and something so ridiculous. And I think it's been kind of the same with music as well. I've been listening to a lot of classical ambient stuff I can focus and concentrate and can kind of provide a bit of a relief from this anxious time. I mean, that's definitely what's resonating with me personally, at least.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. I have different music for different kind of like if I'm running out of time, I'll put techno on because it makes me work really, really fast. I literally sit there and go and write and type at 1,000 miles an hour because of what techno is. It helps me so much. But
yeah, do you have a set playlist in the morning? Do you have anything just to work to?
No,
listening to music?
No, I have normally either it'll be mixes I've got to check out or I'll just put like stuff I've got premiere. I'll just be flicking through that and just because usually like I'm in an EP, so I'll put that on, do some work, and then I kind of have like a if my knees start moving, then whilst I'm working, then I'm kind of I know that I'm into it. Like if they randomly just start bouncing on their own without me whilst I'm sort of just subconsciously listening to the music on my other screen, then I'll kind of have a look and go, well, what's this? And if I get both knees moving, then that's kind of like a gold set that it's actually a decent track.
Nice. I was operating something similar, but I was suspicious of, since I started meditating, I realized that sometimes your energy levels and caffeine can kick in. So the person who you're listening to can just get lucky in terms of you liking that track purely based off the amount of energy you've got at that time. So, do you know what I mean?
That's interesting. But sometimes I'll just put like, I'll get up and I'll be like, right, I want to listen to techno. And it's like 4:45 in the morning and I'll just start listening to techno and then just do loads of work really, really fast. Or if I get really, I've danced around here at like 5 a.m. because I've just found a great track that I'm really into. Mm-hmm. Which has been quite weird, especially when dog walkers are outside the window. It's quite funny. See me dancing around at 5 on a Tuesday morning.
So you've not been on the ambient tip. You've been on.
No, I don't. Dance. No, I don't. I rarely go on the ambient tip. I like all my music sweaty and yeah,
full of
energy.
Love it.
Yeah, I think for me it's the. I love this music from the dance floor, so it has to. I want my office to be like a dance floor, and yeah.
Good man.
Every now and again, I'll find someone. I'll be like, oh yeah, like, but not really ambience. Okay, let's chat about BMC. You are hosting a BMC panel. It's an exciting thing. Is this the first time you've done this and moderated?
First time I moderated. Been on a few panels before. London Music Conference early this year in January.
Yeah, that was January. That feels such a long time ago.
Yeah, it does. That's pre-lockdown. Is what's the status on BMC from what the government said recently?
So the status of BMC has changed since we recorded this podcast.
Now it is a free event. It's a virtual pass for 2020. And BMC have said, due to the current financial state of the electronic music industry and the ever-changing government guidelines, the Brighton Music Conference team have taken the decision to give free access to the virtual conference so that everyone can, in the industry, can benefit from its content during these difficult and hard times. They said it's been frustrating times with constantly changing government guidelines, but we're determined to deliver content that will hopefully benefit DJs, venues, promoters, artists, and everyone working in our industry during these turbulent times. BMC is committed to uniting the electronic music industry and struggling, which everyone is struggling at right now. So they decided the best way to do this is give the content for free. This is in partnership with Beatport, and there's a free pass. All you need to do is go to brightonmusicconference.co.uk. I decided to carry on with this podcast and put it out because there's some great content coming up about community and Facebook and building communities online. So let's jump into that chat now and carry on with the podcast.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the panel. Let's just talk about if it's going ahead, as it's going ahead anyway.
Cool.
So your panel is on curating your own community.
Yeah.
I thought we'd chat about that. I thought about we'd talk about community in general, because I feel like there's a few people that do community really well. I feel like you might have some comments on just on curating your community anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of brands and artists and labels that are kind of striving for that, to build that community.
Yeah.
And just kind of, I thought we'd first talk about what your thought. First of all, let's talk about the panel and kind of who you've got on it and what's involved. But then also let's talk about community in general, you know?
Yeah, wicked. So on the panel, we've got a mate, Jack, who I went to uni with and also goes to Fulham with me, and he works for Bleacher Report, which is one of the world's biggest sports media companies.
Amazing. And
yeah, they're big on American football in the States, and they're huge in football in the UK. And he does podcasts for Bleacher Report, and he does Fulham FC's sort of young modern fanzine for young fans, and he's managed to establish a community around Fulham. I mean, the reason I've got on board mostly is because of what he's done for Fulham Football Club.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up as a season ticket holder, you go to the ground each game with your dad, you go to the pub before with your dad, then you get to the ground with your dad, and then there's people giving out fanzines, whatever, and it's done in this old sort of satirical way, Private Eye-esque,
yeah,
which doesn't really speak to people who are 14 at the time. It's a bit too highbrow and there's too many in-jokes for them. So Jack kind of created Fulhamish with a bunch of mates, and has podcasts, has Instagram stories and feeds, and he's able to communicate to a large amount of young Fulham fans who have grown up with this. It's a little bit alienating for the older generation and the content, but I love the way that he's been able to just create his own online community and build a movement of people around him who listen intently to their podcasts, listen to their predictions. And I think one reason why their online community is so strong, it's called Fulhamish, is because a lot of them work around media, music and sport, which strengthens that. And I think that's any tip for anyone establishing their own community. You've got to be in and around it full-time somehow. Even if you're not full-time on the project, be around it somehow. So yeah, Jack works at Bleacher Report and he does podcasts. He watches the Australian League 2 games on a Tuesday night at 4 a.m. whatever, and counts them out of parties. Like, he's in that culture and he understands how the business works, and therefore he's been able to do it successfully for himself. If you're guessing from the outside what an industry is, it can be really tricky. Can be really tricky. Another panelist who I wanted to come on board, who's actually on Keep Hush's panel, Nix Delanancy, who is one of the founders of Black Bandcamp. She was working at Global Radio and she was able to start Black Bandcamp, and she also started a female collective. And similarly, those projects, those online communities were supported by her role in the industry. And I think I meet a lot of young people who have sick ideas and they want to create their own online community or movement. However, they can struggle if they haven't committed their life to it. They haven't taken the big step to say, right, this is going to be the next 15 years of my life, and I'm going to take a pay cut. I'm not going to work for someone really big. I'm going to follow my passion at the price of my salary. And a lot of people are going to have huge dividends later, but you have to at least take that first step, I think. And that shows people around you that you're serious. So yeah, that's Jack and why I've got him on board. And I think there's interesting parallels for anyone in any media company. I heard the head of biz dev at business development at Defected, James Kirkham, talking about what everyone's role is at a media company or at an online community, really. You're looking for eyes, you're looking for attention, and you're not just competing with people in the same sector as you. You're competing with Netflix, you're competing with YouTube, you're competing with Amazon. And I like the way that the reason my panel's got someone from football, someone from TikTok, and someone from underground electronic music is that I'm trying to work out the ways in which online communities from different sectors are trying to attract attention, build communities, and can inspire each other from different angles. Because often if you get stuck in your same mold and trying to be innovative or creative, it's not very inspiring, and everyone ends up doing the same old live stream over and over again. And yeah, we need to look for inspiration in times like these, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you said about Defected, because I think they do community really well.
Yeah,
I think they, like, I'm in a load of their things just from different events I've been to, and I think they do it really, really well. I think some of the stuff they've done on lockdown has been amazing well. I wondered from on the other side of that is, have you seen anyone make any glaring mistakes? I always feel you learn from your mistakes and more than you do from your successes sometimes. And I always think that you kind of, if you've been in part of communities where people have made just massive mistakes, or even small mistakes that you just think are obvious, that they where their community is failing because it's not growing, or it's not just being as kind of tight as it should be, you know?
People make mistakes. The closest thing, I suppose, is one of my, I wouldn't even call it mistakes. If I went back, I wouldn't do it differently. It's just who I am. But when I was working in an outside industry and I won the IMS Visionaries Award, an award for under 25s to get attention to their idea in electronic music, Mixmag published an article on me, and it was very laudatory and very congratulative of me, myself, and I. And it didn't really take into account where the group had started from and who the founders were and the importance of me and how I came on at a later date. And I somewhat naively didn't understand what a piece of media going out into the public would, how people would react to that. I just thought, I didn't realize there's negative press could come back. So I received some sort of online hate from it. And I mean, it happens. I think anyone I've spoken to realizes that stuff comes. But as far as a mistake goes, I don't regret it, because you just got to learn. And I think as long as you're giving it a go, and as long as you're making the mistakes and you're dusting yourself up and carrying on, then. But I mean, yeah. So just mistakes, they're just so cheesy, isn't it? To say, oh, you got to make mistakes, but yeah. Especially when you're doing something yourself, you've just got to be prepared to make a hell of a lot of them.
Yeah, I think I seem to. I agree. I seem to go through them quite a bit and just go, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. Never mind. I'm going to make it better next time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you can learn, and I suppose having a supportive team around you. So, for example, me moving into the office space at Chrysalis Records and Blue Raincoat Music Management gave me a background of people who worked inside the music industry, and also a further network of people in culture, comms, media, gave me more of an understanding of how those worlds work.
Does that strengthen the group just from you, and you're strengthening the kind of position in the group, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as a result, we've been able to run events with world-leading producers like Robert Miller, who did Charlie's Diamond Life. We've been able to run educational workshops around the country. We've been able to work with leading electronic music brands who have been able to support us. So yeah, just all that, those sort of notches of credibility, I don't know, or having sort of an advisory board for me, for my online communities, works really well. I've realized that there's a hell of a lot of people who have done community 20 years prior to me in electronic music. Mixmag, RA, those guys have, they were all kind of in my position at one point, and they've had to work it out. So for me, having an advisory board of people who have done it but in a different generation is hugely helpful. And I think being able to draw inspiration from what's gone before you and not just what's immediately around you is really important, because otherwise you just end up copying whatever nice thing.
I feel like they did it really well. Mixmag and RA did it really well. I feel like I didn't really get community for a long period. I just kind of like was just blast stuff out there, and it was more me kind of outputting and not being involved in what people were saying, and you're not creating that community. And I feel like that's where we got DC wrong a long time ago. I feel like we're kind of, it's changing quickly, but I still feel like I'm a bit behind or not doing it as well as I should be, you know? Where, like, obviously your community is in Facebook. Yeah. You mentioned you're doing, it's gone into Instagram. But do you feel like Facebook is still a place to win in community, I guess?
Nothing really is like the Facebook groups. There's nothing out there really that has that amount of people that engaged in a forum around specific thread topics and where you can post rich media, videos, audio, photos. There's nothing like it. I think there's a hell of a lot of people trying to emulate the next generation, because people have obviously preempted that Facebook as a giant for generations is becoming not that relevant, and as a company their ethics have come into question. So I think people are trying to decentralize it, but I'm not really sure if a decentralization of it is going to be the most, or the decentralization of the internet is going to be a really effective way for these communities to exist, if that makes sense. That sounded a bit convoluted. Let me explain another way. So in China, you've got WeChat, right? The biggest app, the one app to rule them all. You wake up with it in the morning to buy your, get your taxi, whatever. You pay your dentist at lunchtime, and then you buy dinner on the way home, all on the app. It's cashless economy.
Wow.
There's a huge power in a single centralized system like Facebook or WeChat. And if we're taking off these, if we remove our attention from these platforms, the ability to innovate, the ability to exist as a large mass on one platform doesn't really have, being able to exist as one big large group with a large number, you're able to hive mind and source a lot more information than in a smaller community, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's a power to the Facebook groups, because the amount of people you can have in them that can provide vast amounts of information at a click. Whether that's going to happen on another way, I think it will, but I think it's going to be like the next Spotify, or the next, it's going to be some sort of huge company that's going to do it for us on that sort of scale. But I couldn't tell you what that is yet. Like, I mean, like TikTok, and that I suppose is a link to why we've got someone like Hannah on board on the panel. Hannah's on board because she's working at TikTok, and they're in touch with people who are 16 and 20, 15 and 24 predominantly. And that doesn't really make sense to me or a lot of people my age. This kind of humorous video way of always depicting everything we do in our lives, but it's how they're communicating at the moment. So yeah, interested to hear what she's got to say about how they've established their community and where they see that going. Because for me, I'm curious about how humor as a medium to understand people, how it can always be that powerful, because there's surely got to be a limit where you're not in the mood to create a funny video or like a 15 second, like we want deeper connections with humans. And yeah, I want to work out where the hell's that going.
Yeah, you say for your age, it's even worse for my age. Like, no one of my age gets TikTok at all.
Yeah.
That it's just like, why would I go on there to watch people be stupid? That's literally every comment from all my friends. Or that's from my kids, isn't it? Is usually the comment.
It's like you've been framed extended.
Yeah.
So, it's a powerful tool to talk to young people with, and people are jumping onto it. Brands, labels. I've been interested to see how tentative brands have been in our space to jump on board.
Mm.
You have brands like Pine and DJ who have an account, but they haven't posted, or you've got sort of the Ninja Tunes who are teasing artistic stuff, which looks really cool. So yeah. It's funny to see how people are going to.
Yeah, I was on there. I've been on there for about, I don't know, a year, maybe longer. Like, I talked about it on this podcast maybe last July about going on TikTok.
Yeah.
And then I posted loads of content and it kind of didn't really do much. And I kind of stopped for a little bit. And I was watching all the other, I was watching brands, seeing who, like, just searching accounts to see who else was on there and kind of else was what sort of had claimed their account and was watching it. And. And it was a lot, like you say, all the big players are kind of just sitting there watching it. And I was just like throwing content out. And then I started again beginning of lockdown, I started again. And now I seem to be, like, the videos have been, the video format's changed. It seems to have, like, the stuff that works on Instagram seems to be working on there now, because I think the platform's matured a little bit, which is interesting. Like, before, I was putting music stuff up and it was getting hardly any plays or hardly any follow, nothing basically. And now it's...
Did it do well? Did it grow when you left it? Or
It grew a little bit. But I feel like it's one of those platforms you just have to, like you say, we keep working them all the time.
Yeah.
And as it's just me, it's kind of like, I'll fit it in, you know? But now I went back on there, it was like, I put stuff up there and I've had hundreds of thousands of views now. And it feels like there's the growth of the platform has changed enough that there's music people on there and there's people interesting watching videos of artists. And like, I was throwing up old videos that I've done really well on Instagram and they are now doing really well on there, you know, but which wasn't before, you know? So I feel like the age has leveled up on that platform for sure.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so. So yeah, we'll see what happens, really.
Yeah, and I guess obviously Instagram's now copied it with Reels, and that seems to be, the reach on there seems to be amazing at the moment. So yeah, I guess do you feel groups on Facebook are stronger than pages now?
I think they have been for years Pages are really, I don't really post off our own Facebook page.
Mm.
I don't really get any reach. It's better to post off your personal if you actually want to connect with someone.
Mm.
No one really cares about pages. I mean, I don't really use Facebook apart from the group, really. I don't use Facebook apart from the group. I use Messenger, but I don't really use the Facebook page function or my own personal page function. Groups are just non-commercial spaces where people interested in a certain topic can talk to one another without being advertised to, which I think is kind of what Facebook was when it started.
Yeah.
And pages are business tools and essentially uncool.
Yes. Do you feel like artists and labels should be growing groups of their own? Do you think there's a point to it for an artist and a label?
Yeah, definitely. There's quite a lot of fan groups who exist. I've seen fan groups for Loco Dice had a big one, I think. Ninja Tune have 7,000-8,000 members in theirs. Mostly in their sort of 30s, 40s, and 50s, really. They're a lot of their group I've seen. They're good for fan clubs, for people to talk one-on-one to each other. But to start one now, I'm not really sure if that's where you want to start one. Probably YouTube. Or experimenting with stuff like TikTok or these other platforms, really. I think the good old email newsletter is always just going to be strong for people. Really. It's just that thing that just sort of underpins the rise and fall of all these social media things which we spend so much of our time on growing them, and then they fall down, and then we've got to jump onto the next one. And email is just kind of that solid, I don't know, the uncle that's always going to be there for you no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, I still grows today. It's amazing. I see so many people just advertising email. I love that it's still there. I love that it's still so basic as well. Like, you can't, there's so much stuff you can't do with email newsletters because the platforms just haven't grown as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, love an email.
Yeah, you have to keep it so basic. It's cool. I saw someone creating a community in Messenger the other day, which was quite cool. Have you played with that at all?
I haven't, you know. I haven't, no. I mean, obviously have group chats and stuff, but no.
Yeah, okay. Okay, cool.
What are you doing, actually? I didn't ask you. What are you doing at BMC?
At Brent Moves Conference this year, our plans have changed. We did have two panels. That's got reduced to one. We have a panel where we're interviewing Nicole Mudabar. Every year I host a Breakfast Boost. These are roundtable events. This year we're actually going to do two after last year. We had one last year. This year we're doing two. These are ticketed events at £35 a ticket. And they were both sold out, which was amazing. We're really, really, really pleased that they were both sold out. That obviously includes breakfast. Basically, we have 10 artists, label producers, who want to come and sit and chat and have a kind of like a mastermind, breakfast mastermind. They come with questions and I try to answer them and try to help them along their way. This year, because obviously it's changed, I have offered everyone that's already bought a ticket a virtual pass. So we're going to do two virtual breakfasts this week, and just do them all by Zoom. For everyone that keeps their ticket for next year, for April. BMC has also announced they're going to be back in Brighton at the i360 on the 29th and 30th of April next year.
Cool.
All right, thanks, Graham. And thanks for the question. That was good fun.
Lovely to chat to you, yes. And I'll see you in Brighton.
All right, awesome. All right, take it easy, guys.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
I'll see you soon. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have, please go, if you're listening to an Apple podcast, please go and give it a rating, give it a thumbs up, share it. It really helps the podcast grow on Apple Podcasts and goes up the chart, which means we can get bigger guests with bigger numbers, and which gives you more information and more tips. Thanks so much again for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next time. I've been Graham Farmer. Bye.